Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hi, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you're listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. Tonight, we have Stephen Frampton with us, and he's going to talk about his new book, Thinking Completely Outside the Box, Astrology as a Predictive Tool to Prevent Rampage Shootings. I've read it, and it's at once disturbing and comforting at the same time, and the hypothesis that it lays out. And so we're excited to have Steve with us tonight, and we're going to probe his mind about the things that he found about the Aurora Theater shooting in Colorado back in 2012. But before we do that, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you this evening?
So far, so good, because I'm not on a rampage.
No,
I'm really,
God.
I'm really looking forward to our prestigious guest and, of course, our co-host as well, the guy, the man, Steve, and I, and you interviewing him. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, I couldn't really be more honored. Never in my life have I ever interviewed the author of a book that I've read and admired at the same time. And I'm definitely not just saying that. As an astrologer,
okay,
this book is exciting.
Really?
I'm serious.
No, I know. Absolutely. You're right.
Any astrology enthusiast would be interested in this. I mean, come on, we're talking about the Batman shooter, you know, James Holmes, Aurora, Colorado, a terrible, terrible event in the history of our country.
I think it's fascinating that Steve would put this together. Absolutely. It's not the norm, and I think it's fantastic.
Right. Well, what do you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
Well, let's see. I do the dishes. I vacuum
over there.
I am an intuitive tarot empath, spiritually happy kind of gal sometimes.
Awesome.
And I utilize the tarot cards as my main tool. I feel the tarot symbolic record of human experience, and I stand by that notion.
Very nice. Well, thanks for joining us tonight, Maureen.
Thank you.
Hey, Carmen, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great, thank you. I'm great. Thanks for having us.
Well, tell us what you do over at PsychicAccess.com, please.
So I'm a telepath, empath. Primarily my interest is in psychology, the science of empathy, relationship logic, strategy, and I read tarot cards.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're definitely glad to have you here with us tonight, Carmen. Hope you enjoy the interview.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, we're going to have a great time, because I tell you what, Stephen Frampton knows a thing or two about astrology, and he's here to let us know tonight how we might spot trouble before it happens. Steve's a psychic medium and hermetic occultist, fluent in tarot, alchemy, and a list of metaphysical technologies that's just too long for me to even get into here. For more information about Stephen Frampton, or to reserve your copy of Thinking Completely Outside the Box, please visit StephenFrampton.com, and that is StephenFrampton.com, or click on the link to his book on Steve's permanent guest page here at PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Stephen Frampton. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Stephen. It's good to do this. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too, and I tell you what, we've got a lot of stuff to get into tonight. Okay, and the first thing, obviously, that strikes you about the book is the foreword. You know, once you read the book, your foreword sort of sets the tone for what's about to come next. And can you give us some of the list of the spree shootings and different observations you made about the nature of violent crime?
Yeah, well, I started by saying that as somebody that's very, very happily settled in the United States, I still find the violence in the U.S. baffling, fascinating, And I wanted to start the book with some statistics. You know that astrology particularly is extremely analytical and evidential, and I wanted to show that the book, the research, the findings are a very, very much in the context of a real-world problem. So I listed things like the fact that women in the US are 11 times more likely to be murdered with guns than women in other high-income countries, and that gun control is not politically popular. And I actually appreciate some of the reasons for that, actually having lived here for 6 years. But 33 Americans are murdered with guns each day, and the US murder rate is 20 times higher than other developed countries. So I wanted to start with these statistics and share the facts about this challenge, this real big problem in the US. And then I listed as well the mass shootings that have occurred since Columbine in 1999. And to be honest, Stephen, when I finished the book, and actually this was never intended to be a book, this started out with me just being very intrigued by that particular event, the James Holmes shooting in Aurora, Colorado. And I just decided late one night, well, I wonder what the stars, what the planets were doing and saying at that time. And I just became so deeply entrenched in research and these incredible findings that I carried on researching for a number of months and thought, well, there's enough evidence here for a book, and it can really prove how valuable metaphysical insight can be. It's not woo-woo. This is really how the world functions, and we can get amazing insight. But just before I published the book, I thought, well, I wonder how many shooting sprees there have been in the US while I've been writing the book. So I spent about 9 months on it, and I looked up the number of shooting sprees during that period, and it was 310.
Mm. Oh my God.
In nine months. And that's not just homicides, individuals being killed in shootings. That was shooting sprees.
Right, right. Someone picking up a weapon and maybe killing multiple victims, you know, finally can't take it anymore and cracking, so to speak. Now, with all this in mind, you list four hypotheses in your book that you work with throughout the duration examining this specific event in Colorado. Can you tell us a bit about those four hypotheses?
Yeah, I wanted to include hypotheses because one of my passions is the fact that metaphysical insight can be used to address real-world problems. So we all, as readers, as intuitives working in different ways with different tools, we know how valuable metaphysical insight is for individuals. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to help prove the point that we can use these tools, these incredible incredibly powerful, incredibly accurate tools, such as astrology, to address big problems in the world. So these were the hypotheses I started out with, and I decided that I wouldn't publish this work unless I could prove the hypotheses. And the first is that sophisticated natal and progressed astrology can be used to classify individuals into serious crime risk categories. So I was asking myself, well, can you look at individuals and actually evaluate the extent to which they pose a risk to society? And the answer is yes, you can. I wanted to prove as well that you can understand their psyches, as well as categorizing people, you could understand the makeup of an individual's psyche, actually see what's occurring in there. And then my third hypothesis was that astrology can be used to provide deep insight into criminal tendencies and events. And the fourth, which was the particularly daring one that troubled me most as I began the project, but as I got into it, I realized it could be proven as well. And that was that we can accurately predict when a high-risk individual will commit a serious crime.
That's amazing. I as you're talking, and as I was reading through that part of the book, the pertinent section is right there at the beginning. I couldn't help but think about Philip K. Dick's novel Minority Report. You know what I'm, you know that?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Many people said to me, "Oh, you've got to watch that film while as you're writing this book," and I still haven't watched it, but I've got it on my wish list.
Remarkably similar in scope. Now, so we have the set of hypotheses that your book presents, and sort of acts as a guide for what we're going to be doing in the book. You also talk a little bit about your three variables of basic chart delineation, sort of like rules of engagement for dealing with James Holmes's chart or any chart in particular. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yes, this is the musical analogy. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. I really did love that comparison because it really made it very clear for me to understand. And let me just add real fast that James Holmes has always been a mysterious character. The media didn't report much about him. Very little is known about him. So I just really devoured this part of the book up.
Okay, well, the musical analogy is actually, it's actually attributed to C.C. Zane. It's in the C.C. Zane work. It's how he described the planets, the signs of the zodiac, and then the houses of the chart. So Zane described the planets as musical notes. So they're different. They're unique tones or frequencies. And he explained that if you, for example, play one musical note on a flute and the same note on a cello, you get a very different sound because you're using a different instrument. So he explained that the planetary archetypes function that way. So they are different depending on the sign of the zodiac under which they appear. So Mars in Aquarius is Mars, but Mars in Pisces is different. It behaves differently. It comes across differently as the same musical note would on a different instrument. And then he described the houses as the auditorium. So imagine you play a musical note on a cello in a small room of your home, or you play that same musical note on the cello on a cello in a wonderful concert theatre. You're going to get a very different experience. So he was using that analogy to explain that the planets behave differently under different signs of the zodiac, and they also play out differently depending on the house of the chart, the area of the person's life, therefore, or the environment.
And this is your basic approach to looking at James Holmes's chart, saying, hey, what notes are what instruments are being played? What are the volumes of the music? Is the music discordant or is it harmonious music? That sort of thing.
Yes, and particularly looking at the aspects between the planets and asteroids as well, because the aspect, if there is an aspect between two planets, and remember we're talking about a person's soul, so we talk of the natal chart, but it's a map of the soul. It shows how the person evolved over many experiences of consciousness and what they have become at any point in time. So when you take the natal chart, it's showing you what that person is at that point in time when they incarnate into a physical body on the earth plane. But the fact that there is an aspect formed between two planets that, and therefore two parts of that person's soul or psyche unconsciously, it indicates that there's some form of interaction, some form of collaboration between those two planets, those two archetypes, or those two parts of the person's unconscious mind. And you can think of it as wiring. Think of two things being wired together. And if you've got a harmonious aspect, then you've got a smooth flowing, well functioning, a wiring device between the two parts. But if it's discordant, then you've got a far more problematic form of communication or collaboration between those two parts. And really, when you look at James Holmes's chart, it's very hard to find anything positive to say about it. He was born into this world with an unbelievably challenging chart.
Would it be fair to say that he was doomed?
I say to clients, and I know you say the same thing, that we have free will, that right. We all have challenges in our charts and within ourselves that play out in different ways in life, and most of it is unconscious. But we have the free will to be conscious of that, to learn about ourselves, to discover what's working and what's not working and evolve beyond those patterns. And I think the extent to which a person inquires and does the inner work, the self-mastery, that determines how much they can evolve in this one little lifetime. But I have to say, when you come into the world with a chart like James Holmes's, it really begs the question, well, did he have free will or did he not stand a chance? I don't think he stood a chance in this world. His chart was, or is, mind-blowingly challenging.
It is. I would have to agree. And with his rising sign in Leo, it would, you know, he would be really dedicated to the idea of himself as a certain way. And you know, he might be hard to convince. You know, it might be hard to convince him to see things for the. You know what I mean? But in the book, and I think this is really important too for understanding James Holmes, you talk about astrodynes, and this helps us, I think. Is this like a measure of understanding how pleasant or discordant the music of Holmes's life was? Or what is an astrodyne?
Well, it means the power of the planets, but I always explain to people that you have to look at how prominent something is. Is a tendency, a characteristic, or an archetype prominent within you or weak in you? Because if it's prominent, then it's going to play out significantly in your life, in your way of functioning. And if it's weak, it's not going to play out in such a prominent manner. But then you also have to look at whether that energy, that behavior, that tendency, conscious or unconscious, is discordant or harmonious. So obviously, if something's very prominent in your life but it's harmonious, that's going to express itself very differently than something in your life that's very prominent and discordant. So it would be prominently challenging rather than prominently joyful.
Okay, well, let's look at it from this perspective. Let's say that someone who cared about this individual came to you when Holmes was very young, gave you the chart, and said, you know, is there any particular planet or any particular sign or anything here that jumps out at you as being really, really nasty? What would you have to say to that?
It's almost the whole chart.
It's almost the whole chart. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You know, the things like, well, one thing that really stands out is the natal moon in Virgo. And the moon, even the moon in Virgo doesn't do particularly well. It doesn't really belong in Virgo. But even so, in Holmes's chart, the natal moon is conjunct the south node. The south node is at 28 degrees Virgo, and the natal moon, in other words, his impulses, his emotional processing or lack of, his sensitivity, his ability to empathize, and his unconscious reactions and intuition is right next to, conjunct the south node. And the south node, in my opinion, the south node is extremely malefic. And it's really like a vacuum cleaner. You know, where you see the south node in a chart, you see energy just being sucked out. So already he had, if you just look at the dignity of his moon and you look at the aspects formed between his moon and other parts of his chart and other planets, then he has an extremely discordant moon. In other words, an extremely challenging emotional state, an extremely challenging tendency to react and intuit. And with that being next to the south node, any feeling any emotional processing that would be there is just sucked out of him by that south node. So any time you see something conjunct the south node, in my opinion, it's particularly challenging.
Yeah.
And that's just one observation about his moon.
Could that be like a symbol for sociopathy, like one's ability to empathize with other people, you know, the moon sort of being diluted by the node in that way, having its potency sucked out? Do you see?
It can be, yeah. I think we have to be careful. We have to look at the whole picture, because you can meet, you know, you can work with a client that has an extremely challenging factor in their chart like that.
Right.
But when it's combined with so many other impossibly challenging factors, it builds up to make a situation almost unworkable.
Okay, so, well, let's talk about another one of those challenging factors. We've talked a little bit about the moon in Virgo and how discordant it is in this particular chart. Anything else that struck you as being really bad?
If you look at his third house, which is in a water sign to begin with, that's often an indicator of some psychological challenges in itself. Mm-hmm. But he has Mars, the planet of violence and assertiveness and aggression. And it does have Mars as an archetype, like all of the planets, has its positives, has its positive qualities and its negative qualities. All of these archetypes express themselves on a continuum. So think of happiness and sadness. They're just opposite ends of the continuum of contentment. And so each archetype can express itself in different ways. But his Mars is right at the base of his chart. It's at a powerful point, and it's in Scorpio, which is the sign that it rules with Pluto. So it's enhanced. Mm-hmm. And it's conjunct Pluto. His Mars is at 13 degrees Scorpio. His Pluto's at 11 degrees Scorpio. So the two are in cahoots, really, in their own sign of Scorpio, right at the base of the chart. And by virtue of their positioning, they oppose the midheaven, indicating that it is quite probable this person would become known for violent tendencies, a violent outbreak, as reflected by this Pluto and Mars in Scorpio at the base of the chart. There's another mass murderer that had that same configuration of Mars conjunct Pluto in Scorpio. Now, it doesn't mean, again, that anybody that has Mars conjunct Pluto is going to go and kill a load of people. But again, it's one of the factors, when combined with everything else in his chart, that reflects the fact that he was a very high risk to society.
I tell you, I can't help but think, you know, when you're describing Mars in the third house of the mind, you know, the submerged violence in the mind, you know, someone picking on someone like James Holmes, James Holmes outwardly very meek and mild, but inside he not only knows that he wants to kill you, but he knows exactly how to do it, which poisons to use. You know what I mean? This is because the Mars is in his sign of rulership. Mars is Scorpio. You know, this is a very enabled Mars. And indeed, Holmes
yes.
booby-trapped his house. You know, mm-hmm. very intelligent, highly intelligent young man. So what about it? Were there any planets that perhaps could have offered James Holmes maybe an outlet, an escape? Anything positive in
Well,
there
are a couple of positives, but they enabled him to do what he chose to do, rather than being positives that were able to positively affect the world around him. So his intellect is not questionable. His most powerful planet is Mercury. So his ability to absorb concepts, to retain information, to re-articulate that, to educate himself, that's very much an ability that he has. He had an incredibly high GPA think it was 3.949 or something. So he academically he did extremely well, and he actually was offered a number of grants, a couple of which he turned down, which was strange. So there were already indications some time before this particular event, the dreadful event in the cinema, that there are some strange things going on. So you can say for sure he's a very intelligent guy, obviously not emotionally intelligent, because he's got this really challenging moon in his chart, the moon being the sensing, intuiting, feeling right hemisphere of the brain. But his sun is powerful, so his sense of self, his ability to assert himself is strong. So combined with so many other warning signs in his chart, you can say this is somebody that is able to take action, that is able to stand up and do what he chooses to do. And interestingly, he's got a lot of energy under the sign of Sagittarius. And Sagittarius is a mutable sign. And there was a study by Green and Sasportas, and that one of their findings was that killers often do have an incredibly high proportion of mutable energy.
Right. And, you know, we're going to get to that in a little bit. I wanted to ask you that particular question about James Holmes. But before we do that, I wanted to know what your opinions were. You know, if you could talk more about some of the signs, what the signs are saying in his chart. We talked some about the planets.
The signs of the zodiac, sure.
Right, right. Any particular signs that jumped out at you?
Well, his most powerful sign is Sagittarius. So I think it's useful to say to listeners that every sign of the zodiac is within each person. The archetypes are within us. All of them are within us, just to differing degrees of power and harmony or discord. So James Holmes was 31% Sagittarius, which makes him a very enthusiastic individual, potentially somebody that is able to take action. So he's got a huge dose of that mutable energy just in Sagittarius, and Sagittarius being a fire sign, along with Leo, he also has a big dose of Leo. He's got a lot of fire, so a lot of dynamism and fire that would enable him to take action. But I think one of the really interesting findings was that the energy of Scorpio is very prominent in, but it's massively discordant, hugely discordant. And when Scorpio is discordant, it can express itself as violent, as secretive, as temperamental, vengeful, jealous, etc. So he's got that very discordant and prominent Scorpio in his charts that certainly was or is a big part of his psyche as well. Virgo is very discordant in his chart. So Virgo is really a sign that enables a person to analyze, to organize themselves. It's an earth sign, so it is associated with keeping oneself grounded and taking care of oneself. And clearly he wasn't able to do that.
You know, when I think of Scorpio too, I think of you know, things like vengeance and getting revenge. And for someone like James Holmes, I've often speculated that getting revenge had to have been long a fantasy of this guy. And, you know, it's right there in the fourth house too. Maybe vengeance in the home between mom and dad or something. Later. Who knows?
Well, his Chiron, which is, you know, is an asteroid that indicates where we have some unconscious wounds.
Right.
His Chiron is in the 11th house of community, and that Chiron opposes the sun. In other words, his sense of self pulls in a different direction. There's a tension between his sense of self and that Chiron, the unconscious wounding, and it's also opposed within one degree by his natal Saturn, the major malefic. So that indicates as well a real tension, a real tug of war between any pain and fear within him and this unconscious wounding that lies in the house of community. And that was part of the dynamic that was triggered on that dreadful day in 2012.
I can't help but notice also Saturn's positioning in James Holmes's chart, it being involved as he is in this massive stellium with the Sun and Mercury. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you must have formed some ideas about that particular conjunction and what it must have meant for James.
Yeah, but there's so many things you could say. I mean, we could spend an hour or 2 hours just discussing Saturn or any one element in his chart because it's just fascinating. And you know, you go down the rabbit hole and you find more and more and more. I think one of the very important things to say about that cluster, that stellium, which included the Sun, his power center, his essence, very closely conjunct Saturn, the major malefic. So the Sun being consumed by the major malefic, with Uranus, the planet of revolt, right next to that. So the planet of revolt and eccentricity and individualism consumed by that Saturn as well. But that, and this Mercury, his left brain, is involved in that cluster. But for me, the very important point is that that cluster is what we call in the bends. So when you look at the nodes of the moon, you've got the north node, which is an indication of one's point of integration in life. So it's almost like a calling sign, come over here, head over this way to this part of the chart on your path. And the south node is almost your unconscious reasoning and what you've brought into the world. So he's got that very challenging moon right next to that south node. But anything that is squared to the nodes is what we call in the bends. And anything that is in the bends, in other words, in that bend forming almost a 90-degree square to either node, it's problematic. So his nodes had progressed to 25 degrees, and his progressed Saturn had progressed to 26 degrees. So you've got pretty much that Saturn at the center of that stellium in Sagittarius, squaring the nodes and therefore in the bends. And that in itself is a very important indicator of the level of risk within him.
Right. Because the conjunction by itself would be telling, but having it in the bends, as you say, and I love that phrase because it reminds me of divers in trouble, you know, certainly not a pleasant thing in any case. Now, looking at James Holmes's chart from an elemental perspective, how were the elements distributed in his chart?
Well, he's got a really interesting and really challenging distribution of the elements. So we've got the four elements, the fire, earth, air, and water. And he's 49% fire. So he's a very fiery character. And fire really can express itself as spontaneous, as active, hot-headed, impulsive, even manic or aggressive, overzealous on occasions. So you've got a guy here that's seriously imbalanced, and not only that, he's 49% fire. Then you look at his the earth in his chart. So the earth keeping you grounded. You know, I think of earth as pragmatism and brushing your teeth, eating well, exercising, sleeping, doing the things that you need to do to be here on earth and to be healthily well integrated here in life. His earth is discordant, but what's really shocking is he has only 14.9% water. Water representing our ability to nurture, to emotionalize, bond with other people, to to connect and to... You know,
on that point, I must stop for a commercial.
That's
That's a good place to actually take a break. And when we get back, we will talk about the water element in James Holmes's chart. Meanwhile, you can see Stephen at his website, stephenframpton.com, for his book. We will be right back.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Welcome back to the Psychic Viewpoint. I have with me here Steve Frampton. We're talking about his book, Thinking Completely Outside the Box. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you.
We were just talking about the way the elements, earth, water, air, and fire are distributed throughout Holmes's chart. And we were talking about the water, the emotion element, how James relates to other people. You were telling us about that. Can you continue with those comments, please?
You know, I'd say that the statistics show that his water element is wildly discordant. So we're talking about somebody that is extremely unbalanced emotionally. You know, you could come to that conclusion just by analyzing the power and discord of his moon and the fact that it's conjunct the south node, and therefore you've got that vacuuming effect where the sort of energy is just sucked out of that part of the chart. But then when you analyze water, the water element in his chart, you see that it's hugely discordant, which means that he has major issues with feelings, emotion, and the impulses and reactions that we have.
Very interesting. And you know, I remember talking about the fire element. Reading in the book, you go into he has a grand trine in fire, if memory
serves.
And that has to be that has to have had a significant impact on his personality.
Yeah, you know, he's got a grand cross in his charts, which is the most challenging aspect we see in a person's chart within the psyche. Now, just because somebody has a grand cross doesn't mean that that's it. They're going to become James Holmes or do what he did. But again, when you combine it with other factors, he was extremely high risk. But what's interesting with his chart is he has got this grand trine between the ascendant, his persona, his character, and his comportment. And usually a grand trine is considered to be very positive. But you see, his grand trine is connected to the Saturn, the major malefic. So you've got that very challenging energy of Saturn that's wired into this trine and therefore is firing its energy through the trine. So even his grand trine becomes consumed by the major malefic Saturn, which is extremely challenging. And, you know, the top of the trine connects to Jupiter, which is a person's good fortune, ability to get where they want to be. He's got a very powerful, very harmonious Jupiter, and it's in Aries, so it's the sign of action. And really, that's what enabled him to implement his plan flawlessly, and it's the connection of the major malefic Saturn, amongst other things, into that grand trine that enabled him to do what he wanted to do.
Now, I want to emphasize here that our perspective tonight and the point of view of the book, Thinking Completely Outside the Box, isn't saying that that the moon in Virgo is bad or this particular thing is bad. No, the book and Stephen Frampton's method as a whole looks at a complex of several different testimonies that all answer to one particular issue. And in this case, it's the mental health and the propensity to violence of someone. Now, in the book, this is one thing that's really fascinating. You discovered some interesting data about the fixed stars and the asteroids. Do you care to share any of those findings with us?
Yes, well, I read some really interesting information about asteroids, and I started plotting different asteroids into James Holmes's natal chart and also into the progress chart, which shows you the deep underlying conditions within him at the time of the crime. So you know, as a hermetic astrologer, that we look at deep underlying conditions that can be triggered. So we see the transiting planets as triggers. They're like matches being lit or lighting candles, but there has to be a candle to light. Otherwise, you just strike a match and, you know, it goes out.
Right.
So we describe those deep underlying conditions as progressions. So I progressed his chart as well as looking at his natal chart. And I spent months on this, but I was plotting in the asteroids and found, you know, there are asteroids that have very negative connotations, or that express themselves very negatively. And one was Zubin El Ganubi. It's the southern claw. And Zubin El Ganubi is a very malefic asteroid. And interestingly, it was right at the base of his chart, with that the Mars and Pluto that were just sitting there waiting to be activated. And I forgot to mention that they're conjunct the part of fortune. In other words, what he would become known for potentially.
Oh, yes, definitely pretty scary stuff, drastic indeed. Now, you know, I wanted to ask you if, you know, you mentioned before the mutability of certain violent types of serial offenders. You know, what other types of astrological signs might you expect to see for the mentally ill?
Well, I always look at the third house, because that's if you know the person's time of birth. If you don't know the time of birth, you can't determine. You can analyze a lot, but you can't assess the different houses.
Right.
But I look at the third house because I consider it to be an important factor in a person's psyche or psychological functioning. And James Holmes has a very challenging third house. So I find that people that have extremely challenging third houses do often have psychological challenges. Again, that one factor doesn't mean that a person's a mass murderer, but it's one of many indicators. Right. And again, the moon, looking whether anything's in the bends, looking at the 12th house. Interestingly, in his chart, you see his 12th house of the unconscious and of endings, your undoing, is ruled by Cancer. It doesn't have a planet in it. Therefore, it's ruled by that very discordant moon conjunct the south node. So it was his emotional state, his mental illness, that was his undoing. Interestingly, you see, it's his Neptune that became activated by transiting Pluto, that was perfectly aligned with the midheaven. That was just incredible. And it's that Neptune that rules his house of death.
Now, this is probably a pretty good time to start talking about what the progressions were doing, what his secondary progress chart was doing at the time of the event. And before we even get started in that, you know, one way that helps me to understand it is sort of like the transiting planets are sort of like second hands, tick, 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 ticking. And when they fall into a particular configuration, then boom, stuff starts happening. Now, Steve, can you first give us a little background about how you progress a chart and how it can tell about future events when used with transits?
Yes, so we always consider the natal chart. That's the basis. If a potential is not present in the natal chart, then it's not going to happen. So, for example, if you say I have a natal chart that, that doesn't indicate potential to win the lottery, and you do, and we both win the lottery, I might win $20 on a scratch card, and you might win millions. But the potential's got to be there in the natal chart. So you first, you begin there, and that's where we began with James Holmes. Then we progress it using the principle of a day for each year. So we progress the planets in the ephemeris. The ephemeris shows us the positioning of the planets at any point in time. Very predictable, because we know exactly the movement of the planets. So we adjust the positioning of the natal planets according to that principle of a day to day for a year. And then when we contrast those progressed planets with each other and with the natal planets, we see what we call progressions, those deep underlying conditions that have taken shape within a person's psyche, or within the psyche of a collective entity like a nation. So you then look at when those deep underlying conditions get triggered by transiting planets, and it's just mind blowing. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't sit and put this together. You couldn't say, let's take a blank chart and create a really discordant natal chart and make it progress. And it just would be almost impossible to make that happen. This is metaphysical. The universe. This is just mind-blowing.
To sort of illustrate this principle here, I'd like to use my chart, because I think my chart lends itself very well for this. My sun is at 29 degrees of Leo. Okay, it's mm-hmm. essentially at the final degree of Leo. So when we progress my sun, then it travels 30 degrees, so it's at the 29 degree of Virgo. So my progressed sun is at 29 degrees of Virgo when I am 29 years old, mm-hmm. or 30. You see, so it just it progresses 1 degree per day, and that's a year. So what we're doing is lining up charts, James Holmes's natal chart, his secondary progress chart, and plus the chart of the transits. That's essentially how we're seeing how these things, the relationship between them, right, Steve?
Yes, yeah. And you see things like the very few progressive charts at the very moment of the atrocity in Aurora. You see incredible things like his Uranus. If you progress his Uranus being individuality and revolt, sudden revolt, that had aligned itself in a square, which is an obstacle formation to that really unstable moon, those really unstable emotions and mentality that we were talking about. So that was one dynamic that suggested, okay, this situation's becoming triggered. But there are many, many other factors, like his Pluto had progressed over and was perfectly conjunct next to that natal Mars, that aggression within him. So that progression of Pluto to Mars crystallized their collaboration in their own sign to be violent. And then there's just so many other factors. The transiting north node, for example, was forming a square, which is an obstacle aspect to that progressed Uranus, again suggesting that he was poised for a date with destiny somehow. And it just goes on and on and on. I mean, progressed Saturn had become perfectly conjunct his natal Uranus, so you've got the major malefic combining with that potential tendency for him to revolt and completely lose control of his state of mind. And it just goes on and on.
Well, I'm sure as you were doing this research, some speculations must have popped into your head as to why on earth Holmes may have done this. You know, I mean, as you're looking at all of this stuff, you're getting almost a tactile impression of what it's like to be inside this guy's skin. And in doing so, did you feel yourself like certain theories starting to form as to motive or anything? And I realize it's just pure speculation as to the why he did this god-awful, terrible thing. But did you find yourself speculating along those lines?
Well, you're talking about a person that was deeply disturbed, mm-hmm. that had arrived at a point in time when their disturbance was about to externally manifest itself. And he was taking a number of psychiatric drugs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things discovered in my research is that all of these rampage killings in recent years have involved either people taking cocktails of psychiatric meds or withdrawing from cocktails of psychiatric meds. So Adam Lanza in Newtown, Connecticut, I think he was taking 11 different psychiatric meds. Yeah. Well, I took one medication for anxiety at a period of time in my life, and I remember just one night with not having it and withdrawing from it. I mean, I didn't sleep that night. I had dreadful nightmares. Can you imagine the cocktail of 11 potent psychiatric drugs? And how do you, you know, we don't fully understand any of them. And we know that one of them can have side effects. How the hell do you determine how 11 of them would function together? And right. So you're talking about people that were very much, very highly medicated as well.
That makes me think of his moon in Virgo. That's a very pharmaceutical sort yep. of moon right there. And also the moon ruling his 12th house makes me think, you know, a lot of phobias too, you know, the multiplicity yes. of Virgo. So this is a very scared individual is what I'm
yes,
getting the impression
yeah.
of.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, the other thing is, Steve, you know, I get inquiries from psychiatrists at times asking me to look at a client's chart to give them my input. What they do with it is down to them. I'm not a psychiatrist. But if you had a psychiatrist saying to you, okay, this patient has some psychiatric problems, have a look at their chart, you'd immediately say, oh, the moon is conjunct South Node. Be very careful how you manage and how you medicate this individual. And that's right. just with the moon. That's without looking at everything else that's going on in the chart or progressing it to a point in time and seeing that he was about to lose control. It was like a spontaneous combustion, basically.
And you, this is one thing that is very beautiful about the book that you've written, is because it really does show a mechanical way that, I don't know, God or the supreme being or whatever functions. Like you said, you know, this is a sort of thing that's impossible to fake. You can't set up the initial conditions of these charts, you know, and have them correspond the way that they do and describe that event the way that they do. It's truly amazing. And that's what your book is, really an enjoyable academic experiment, quite frankly.
Thank you. As I said, Stephen, it wasn't meant to be a book. It was just me researching something. The way I work is I just end up researching things that fascinate me. So you and I are working on a book that I think is going to be really great. I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a million times better than what I produce on my own. But I feel led to do certain things. And when I'm blown away by what I discover, what is unveiled, I want to share it. And I published this book thinking, I don't care if only two people read it. I would hope that one of those two people is somebody in law enforcement or in psychiatry that can feel inspired to do something with this information in their profession. That's why I published it. But it's very interesting that the people are not ready for this evidence. So I've sent this to FBI officers all over the US, not because I want them to read my book or because I care about publicity. I want them to know that this kind of information is available and can be used in conjunction with other tools like psychiatric assessments, like early warning signs. You know, James Holmes's therapist or psychologist on the campus had heard him say that he was homicidal, for example, and she alerted the police, but nothing was done, or not enough was done. He bought 3,000 rounds of ammo on the internet. Now, who needs 3,000 rounds of ammo? And there were so many red flags, but if those pieces are not put together, then it's missed. And my point is, you can't predict exactly what's going to occur in the world through astrology. You can't pinpoint it specifically to a location. But if you're looking at individuals that are considered risky, then you can provide massive insight into what they would do, how dangerous they are, and when they would do it. But the FBI responded with things like, oh, we're not allowed to review a book.
Yeah, now the interesting thing is that astrology is actually no different than the behavioral science unit in Quantico, Virginia. I've read many writings offered by a lot of the psychiatrists and you know the special agents like John Douglas who worked there, and it's really astrology. It's judging based upon archetypes. I've looked at the charts of a lot of killers and criminals, and there is definitely a stamp, you know, a factor.
And what I found was also, Steve, that I didn't publish in the book, but another very interesting finding was that, and I looked at a lot of mass murderers and serial killers charts, when you look at the prenatal eclipse, in other words, the eclipse that occurred before birth, it's a very important indicator. The eclipse that occurred before James Holmes was born was exactly on top of that node, that south node, indicating that that would be the major theme that would play itself out in his life.
Yeah, and I've read that the south node has a lot to do with one's karma too, that the nodal mm-hmm. axis entirely has yep. a lot to do with one's karma.
Absolutely.
And you know, that's a wonderful thing about your book is that, you know, it's one gets the sense that its audience is indeed for the FBI, law enforcement officials. Astrology as an investigative tool, as astrology as a serious tool for investigation. And the book has a very sober outlook in the way that it goes about proving and arguing for its hypotheses. I certainly encourage everyone to go out and get a copy at stephenframpton.com. Now, very important, Steve spells his name with a V. I'm from the rebellious tribe that does it with a PH. That's stephenframpton.com. And also you can get his book from his permanent guest page here at psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Well, Steve, I do believe we've come about to the end of our time together here. Is there anything you'd like to add?
I'd like to thank you, Stephen, for your enthusiasm and for your excellent interviewing skills. I really enjoyed it, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about what I discovered in that piece of research.
It was a great book. I love reading about astrology, and you know, obviously it's one of the best ways to learn. And I'll tell you one thing, if you get this book, you're going to learn a lot about astrology. Very clear and fascinating work. So once again, Steve, we really do appreciate you coming up here and talking to us about it. And again, if you're interested in picking up a copy, stephenframpton.com is the place to be. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'd like to take a few moments.
No, good night. We're not going to say good night to the guy, are we? I'm joking. We want him here.
Right. No.
Sorry, it was a really good interview. I just wanted to just butt in skin that. Thank you.
You did. Did you like the interview, Maureen?
I sure did, and you guys were lovely together, and I really am glad. I wondered if our prestigious guest was going to be sticking around, and he is, and I'm really going, okay, well, you know, anyway, so I can't wait to.
Oh, yeah, he's got like a whole second hour full of reading.
I know, but you know, he's our guest. Maybe we should give him a little, stick him up in the air and put him on a platform. But no, I can't wait. Just saying, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to discuss our banter with that.
Thank you, yes,
well,
it's definitely coming, okay? You're
well
gonna,
done.
You're first in my crosshairs, Maureen, for the banter. Just want you to know that. But first, before we get to that banter, I'd like to take a moment to make a few announcements. We want you to stay tuned for the second hour of our show. That's right. Just because the interview is done, we are far from wrapping up. You still have an hour to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce that call-in number later, so have your pen and paper handy. If you are unable to catch last week's interview with Lisa Williams, then you're in luck because you'll find a recorded archive link as well as archives of all previous shows for free on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our goal to connect with as many of you as possible, so share those links and the light of knowledge and comfort that the links bring with others. Be sure to visit psychicbloggers.com to learn about everything related to metaphysics and spiritual matters for free. Everything from reincarnation to soulmate seeking to developing your own psychic abilities is there. Psychicbloggers.com. Spread the word. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to discover more about them. You can choose from a list of some of the most authentically gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each of our psychic advisors. All the co-hosts here, including myself and Steve, on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com, work at Psychic Access. And if you'd like a detailed personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. Maureen and Carmen also work there. Now, by the way, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic that's referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room. We want all of you to listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Now, time for our banter. And Maureen, are you there? Are you still?
Wait, what are we talking about tonight? I'm joking. Yes,
Maureen,
I am.
We're talking about our favorite topic, astrology.
Yeah, no, well, in the book, in astrology, I mean, I am the major astrologist here, so let's just get joking.
We are all listening.
I know, I'm the old timer one that went through the torment of having to do it in the mind of putting, you guys, come on, you guys are fantastic. But what I wanted to ask, and Steve, and I don't, because Steve's in our banter, right, too?
Oh,
yes?
Yeah, we're gonna get him.
So he's just like a normal guy. Okay, I can just say whatever I normally say nicely. Okay. No, Steve, you know, I remember when you were talking before you, you know, had the book completed, and I didn't know, I don't think any of us knew at the time. It was over a couple months, maybe, I guess, you guys, something like that, and you were discussing what you've been doing, and I thought, wow, great idea. And there's two things I want. I'll give someone else a chance. But the one thing I wanted to ask you, and if you don't want, I don't want to talk about names or whatever, but you said it was very interesting, like some type of synchronicity was going on because you went through an experience with somebody that you knew or that you were helping, right? Do you follow me on what I'm talking about? During the time, it all kind
of... Oh, yes, yes, yeah, yeah. That
and
was
really, crazy. That really stayed with me because...
Yeah.
This is the thing you're working on and creating all this energy, but don't you think in some ways this could be part of your next, extension from what you're talking about now?
To be honest, you know? I mean, I can't go into that.
I know you
can't. What happened there, but that experience in itself, the fact that you're focusing on something or researching something, and then you come, the actual problem, comes presently, in your face. To home.
That just
blew me away. That could be a book in itself, to be honest.
No, I think it was so
bizarre.
Synchronicity. It's a synchronicity because maybe there's, you know, I love your, and don't get me wrong, what your book's about things, you know, that why these people have already happened. But what about the ones that you could kind of more get a, I know we can do that to some point, but you've kind of experienced that, if maybe be more mindful about certain things, because I know us doing what we do, sometimes we just want to not.
Well,
it's not like, you know.
You know, Maureen, that situation and other situations I've seen have made it really clear to me how broken the psychiatric.
Yeah.
Supporters in the United States, because I've seen homicidal people who had been hoarding weapons cranked out of a psychiatric facility after 2 days because their insurance didn't cover it anymore. Oh, here are some meds, go home, good luck with your life. When they potentially present a massive risk to society. So there are so many holes in the system in the US, and I'm not saying it's perfect elsewhere, but I have seen situations that make you want to fall to the floor and cry with despair, the lack of care.
Yeah, but see, that's the kind of thing that you could, I just could see this going into, because what you are learning, you could help. You know why I'm asking you about this? Because where I'm sitting, where I come from, there has been personal experience. I don't care. You know, I always throw myself out there to everybody can hear my business. I don't care of what went on in my life. And I've been on that end of what you're talking about. I'm not bragging, but I don't care. I don't feel bad about my, well, you know, it was a time. And I was in a, very interesting situation. I by choice put myself into a place because I wasn't going to be around if I didn't. So, but the bottom line is what went on there was unbelievable and exactly what you're talking about. It was been going on, and I was in that other side of it where you see it.
Mm-hmm.
I was there living it amongst these for 30 days at least. But I'm just saying it could be really helpful that, you know, I can see you really being able to work closely with other people in that field to help make a difference somewhere, even if it's a little bit by little bit. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do. But
I'm really looking forward.
I have a friend that committed suicide in December. And he'd been in a psychiatric facility, and he was given a therapist that was about 21 years old. How does a 21-year-old relate to a 45-year-old man who's lost his job and everything?
It doesn't work, and it doesn't work when you're labeled. It does, and they keep it. I know, and even in a higher end place where I'm just saying from my own I know personally. I'm just saying, just my, you know, my journey, and not watching somebody else. Go, you know, be gone, and I broke my heart. But although I was there for the same, the thing of it is, there could be some changes. I do think that we're at that, like what you're doing, and you're talking about getting this more out. Even in, it all fuses about my daughter's generation, what they're going to be doing. Everybody coming together and getting us all straightened out, or being there. And being okay, not putting a stigma on things or this, we could help people than just. I love your book talking about what, you know, using the
Maureen, we all have, nearly everybody has a time in life where when they have some kind of emotional or psychological crisis. I have twice, and it's such a lonely place to be.
And it's not, and it's very shameful too in a lot of ways. And it's not, I'm not talking, help me, but you know, when you cross the line, but what's not happening is if you could work with people to say, listen, this is what's happening with you. Maybe you're on your own rampage at this time, or besides chemical things, there's other things going on. I'm looking forward to more of what you're going to be doing with this. I really am. I really feel that there's so much that, I'm not, you know, pushing you. Please do, you know, Steve.
Well,
I'm just
this is specifically why I published the book, Maureen. As I said, I don't care if it sells 5 copies or 50,000 copies.
No,
I care
good.
That it lands. Hopefully, it's gonna land in
president.
The hands. Yeah, it's gonna land in the hands of some psychiatrists who will
and
be trained.
And it's the timing is absolutely perfect right now for that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rooting. Well, I'm not rooting for you. There's no reason for it. I applaud you, and you should be. And don't say thank you to me because you should thank you to yourself.
My attitude was, okay, I'll do this piece of work and I'll put it out there, and spirit needs to figure out what happens to it then. I feel like I've done that. That it's out there. Spirit can figure out what happens.
Yeah, but you made a choice, Steve. You did good. And it was working. It's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to something. I'm looking forward to the journey on this part of your work.
Thank
very
you.
Much so.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I'm done right now. I won't hog the thing.
Well, it certainly is a fascinating read. Like I say, I zip right through it, and it's going to be one of those books I go back and reread. Carmen, I'm curious to hear what your input was on the interview, and perhaps maybe you have some questions for Steve.
Yeah. Hey, that was interesting. Thank you, Steve. I'm much more specific in diagnosing problems with people because I'm just looking at different types. For one, I would say that James Holmes would be obviously the most obvious target to continue to perpetuate the mental health discussion because he had already been primarily on medications prior to that. Yet in our society now, since that news release has happened, the awareness has only gone into kind of a bogus fundraising facility and a dubious shaming of all people with any kind of depression, such as when we see the words crazy or crazy being used in popular songs and literature, like, you know, the Rihanna song, which was actually in really poor taste. That's why people cannot actually go out and get treatment. On the other hand, when they do, one of the things I'd like to say is probably like Steve, you said, they don't get a lot of help and they're put on concurrent medications. Excuse my voice. I have a flu. One of the things I would like to say is the differences between a functioning sociopath and psychopaths, of which I know many, of which many of my clients and people that I know well are functioning sociopaths. We're talking about people that make a lot of money and that don't have to pull the trigger in any way to do any kind of killing.
Some of them run the planet, don't they?
That is correct. And those people, I'd be really interested in sort of like figuring out what they need, because I have had, and I wonder if you could fine-tune this, would be so interesting to work with you, because in a way, when I do on occasion, there's like a client or a person in my life, and I'll identify they have some kind of abandonment disorder, which is actually far more dangerous than bipolar disorder. Because with an abandonment disorder, you have somebody that really doesn't want to be left alone. Whereas, in fact, I was discussing this with somebody else the other day, and we were laughing at the fact that at least, you know, some people with depression and bipolar disorder generally keep to themselves. A person with an antisocial abandonment disorder will actually continue to add friends to their Facebook and continue to friend everybody whilst never having a moment for themselves and being highly narcissistic. I'd be very interested to see what can be done for people like that, because I have found there's this absurd combination of trying to give them attention, which often backfires because then you bring out the narcissism, and then that can actually trigger a form of psychopathy, and then eventually what people get confused as with mental illness, and I'm not going to put that into baby terms because many of people in politics and power obviously are quote-unquote mentally unwell, if you want to put into that context, how to help these people. I mean, like, can you get an actual image of that and say, well, look, I'm going to give that person less attention?
Well, I think, you know, in my book, Carmen, I made a very specific point, and I've got it here in front of me. I wrote, I should point out at this stage that I'm not proposing how to manage individuals with a natural predisposition to kill, or you can say with other psychiatric problems. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so I said that's not my area of expertise. What I'm proposing is that metaphysical insight be combined with other forms of information and other tools to prevent serious crime. So I tried not to, or I deliberately avoided saying, and this is what I think should be done, because each person's different, and I'm not a psychologist, certainly not a psychiatrist.
But that you can be used for that, correct, Steve? I mean, I could call you.
Well, I can give you the facts about your astrology, or I can give a psychiatrist the facts about a person's psychology, but I'm not qualified to diagnose a person. Although I can say, well, actually, I'm feeling, looking at this chart, that maybe that diagnosis wouldn't be the right one. It may be more in this direction, but I'm not qualified to diagnose, and I'm not in a position, and I don't want to say, oh, and this is how I think a person should be treated, or this is how I think this situation should be handled, because I would be completely out of my depth there. I'm saying, as a metaphysician, we can provide a huge amount of information. Now, how that information is used with other tools or the solutions, I've sort of said in my book, that's beyond my scope. My objective was to prove that metaphysical tools like astrology can provide a huge amount of information into a person, levels of risk within a person, and specifically when they may fall apart or when they may take action upon these underlying tendencies. How you manage all of that, I don't know. And I was made the comments I made about the psychiatric system. They are, a layman's observations of, based upon experiences I've observed, people that I've cared about that have gone into the system, been spat back out, committed suicide, or were sent back home with some pills and still possibly present a high risk to society or to themselves. How it should all be fixed, I've got some ideas, but I don't feel qualified to go there.
Can I ask you if you saw any tendencies in any of our special politicians? And you can always talk to me about that later.
You know what? Before we get into that question, let me just announce the call-in number, guys. I'm sorry. I know this is fascinating. I'm fascinated myself. But actually, I got to get that number out there. It is 724-444-4851. Each call is going to automatically be placed on hold and will be answered in the order received. You'll hear the show to help you relax during the wait, but when you get on the air, we ask that you're very clear and direct with your one question. We can only take one question per person in the interest of fairness to all. So please restrict your call to one question. Make it a sharp, focused question, and you'll get a better answer. Again, that number is 724-444-4851. Steve, Carmen, I do apologize for interrupting there.
No problem.
No, thank you, Steve. You were just wrapping up on that question, which, of course, I'm sure you've peeked into that.
Yeah, remind me what the question was, Carmen.
If you saw similarities to James Holmes's chart in any of the major players that we have in the political fields, not naming any names.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, for example, you look at Saddam Hussein, blindingly obvious problems in his chart.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of my eyebrows are raised when I look at Assad, Bashar al-Assad's charts, the president of Syria, seriously unhinged. And then there are other characters like the leader in North Korea. Well, you can't get his birth data to properly, we can't get his birth time, I don't think, which limits the level of insight. But I certainly think that this kind of profiling could be extremely useful when it comes to diplomacy and potential conflicts in the world. Again, how you sit at the table and how that plays out, I don't know, but I know that a lot of information could be provided about the level of risk a leader presents, and you can also look in detail at when they could be triggered. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, fascinating. I would love to be in your position, you know, bird's eye view. Fascinating. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Answered my question.
Good questions. Thank you.
Yeah, it's. I think I read in one textbook, it's called the angel's eye view, where we are actually looking from the perspective of angels into the person's soul. But with that, we've actually moved into that portion of the show where we're taking live calls. And Carmen, you have a caller from New York.
Okay, great. Hello, person from New York. Nice to meet you. Good. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
What's your name?
Anne.
Hi, Anne. How are you tonight? Good for you.
So this is a quick question. I'm in training for a job, and, you know, I have an instructor who's kind of a therapist at the same time. And today, I thought, like when I told her that I was focusing on negativities during work and that exhausted me, and I came to tell her that she was annoyed. I just want to know if, like, she's getting annoyed by me.
Okay, let me have a look at this one moment here. This is a perfect question for me. Okay. Well, she may have seemed that way because you say this was in class, and she has other distractions. So possible, yes. Always ongoing distractions. And what she doesn't like is marking people. I think that's one of her hardest traits. So when you come in, she's got an established routine with this group. And I think it's only about the fact that she's probably being protective over her students. She doesn't feel like bringing this to any new point. Like, she's just generally a sort of a frustrated individual. She seems to me that she will try and cautiously be friendly with you at a later date, but she's not going to be too forward or too assertive, and she will not give you any insight for some time. you will find that she's just going to be avoidant. Pardon me, you were saying?
Yeah, you mean insights into my own life, or?
No, I think into your relationship. Like, frankly, here I go. I'm just going to sum this up for you here. What she's going to do, because I'm just reading it literally card by card here. I have about 30 out in front of me, is that, you know, she was more actually focused on her work, very focused on her students. That she gets into a zone. When she gets into this zone, she tends to probably push other people out because she's got a certain amount of pride around her job. So you perceived that correctly. And then the reading seemed to predict that she wouldn't necessarily be that forthcoming about resolving this issue, though she would. So in other words, it's more about not really drawing too much attention to it, not drawing her out, but all, as an empath, giving you the advice to mitigate or withdraw your attention from the problem so you don't project too much anxiety her way, because that would probably escalate the problem. So she doesn't seem to me like she's really decided to dislike you yet. And so I would say this definitely does seem to have some potential for you at a later date to be resolved. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah, so she, when I came to talk to her today about, like, the fact that I was really distracted by negative thinking and I was exhausted and wasn't able to work, was she slightly annoyed?
Only because she had to do this kind of a personnel maneuver, as in taking care of a colleague when she is really focused on her students. Was she really annoyed? No, she was delegating a responsibility to you, that's all. At this stage, it's still okay. Okay, so we have our next caller. I really appreciate you calling. So if you want to call me and talk in private at some point, then that would be great. Just give me a call.
Okay.
My name is Carmen, okay? Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for that. Steve, you have a caller from South Carolina.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from South Carolina? Hello, South Carolina. Are you there? Let's see. Okay, let's see if Louisiana is there. Is somebody there? Somebody calling from Louisiana?
Hello.
Hi there. What's your name?
My name's Sierra.
Sorry, your name is?
Sierra,
how are you doing, Sierra?
I'm doing good.
Good. What's your question, Sierra?
My question is, I just got out of a horrible relationship, and I was just wondering, like, do you see another one forming soon?
Let's see. Oh, I can see. Yeah, I can see you've had your heart broken. Okay. Logically, we should not just get straight into another relationship. We should reflect upon what worked, what didn't work within ourselves, within the other person, within the relationship, in order to extract value from the experience and get greater clarity about what we are looking for in a relationship, what we're looking for in a partner, and also making sure that we extract the learning and we evolve beyond whatever wasn't working within us. Because if it was a poor relationship that we got ourselves into, or the dynamic was challenging, then we can evolve beyond that so that we don't experience that again. So I can see that the relationship started out well, and it really looked like and felt like it was potentially the whole deal. And you felt very disappointed. You felt that your dream, your trust in life was just turned upside down. And I know that you feel very hurt. I've got the Three of Swords here in front of me. So you're still very raw, very hurt, and you need to nurture yourself and become your own best friend, your own mentor, your own flag carrier and supporter, play those roles for yourself and heal. But definitely there are opportunities in future. And I see actually at a point in time, it's about 9-12 months out. You know, and I remember speaking to a client the other day, and I said to her, well, it's going to be 3 months. You'll meet somebody great in 3 months. And she said, oh, my God, it's got to wait 3 months. And I said, well, if you can't wait 3 months, then you've got a problem. We have to allow life to unfold and do the inner work and be happy with ourselves and okay within ourselves. We don't need somebody to rush in and complete us, because we're complete as we are. So you take a healthy approach to it. But 9-12 months, you actually have two people that you get to know, and two people that are very interested in you. I would say that younger than you, actually slightly younger than you, one is quite dynamic and go-getting and enthusiastic and adventurous in life, and the other is a more sensitive, more creative type that really expresses a desire to be with you. And I see you needing to choose. So you feel like your world's been turned upside down. You feel like the dream went wrong, but understand that it serves a purpose, and you've got to observe and identify the purpose and extract value from the experience. And if you do that, then yes, I feel that there's a great relationship for you in the future. Okay. But there will be choices to be made, and you'll need to make those choices carefully. There's an older partner as well, potentially, but I feel that person's quite conflicted in their way of thinking and could be quite restrictive.
That sounds like my ex.
okay. So that's to be left behind. Go forward. Mm-hmm. Two opportunities. I'm drawn beyond fall, but learn to know that you're fine as you are. You're complete. Life can be great. Each day can be wonderful if you make it that way. So move forward and take the learning with you and create something wonderful. Okay,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Thank you
very much for that, Steve. And Maureen, we have a call for you from South Carolina.
I love South Carolina. Hello, South Carolina. I was just taking a nice drink of something yummy, but not bad. Hello.
Hey, Maureen, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this? I'm sorry, your name?
Kiana.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Kiana.
Hi, Kiana, how are you?
Hey, doing okay, how about you?
I'm doing okay. It's nice to, I know your voice. I think
yes,
I
ma'am.
Yes, I do. Well, how are you? What can I help you with?
I'm actually calling to get a little bit more insight. I was recently told something about a past life regression. An obstacle that's causing me, not necessarily issues, but may have had something to do with the past life that I had before my time with conception. And I just want a little bit more insight on, I guess, what exactly is going on and subconsciously with me pertaining to that past life that I may have had.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from, but because of the time frame, I want to be able to help you the best I can. In the time frame, we're doing these readings quickly. We need to try to put this in more of a direct, like one type of question, so I can help you out the best, because I know this could be, this is a pretty more, a little bit more involved. What I wanted to know is this. I know what you're saying is, okay, the bottom line is somebody, you spoke to somebody, and I'm all for that. We do certain things we need to learn, and we can be observant if we hear our past life stuff. So is there something going on with you that you're wondering may have a lot to do with that? Is that what I hear you saying? Maybe something like that.
Yeah, I was looking into the hypnotherapy. To find out if there's something subconsciously that's causing me issues with conceiving right now.
I'm sorry, so I'm having a lot of baby blues. Did you say conceiving? Yeah. Pregnancy stuff, right? Is that what you said?
Right.
Okay, yes. Got it. Perfect. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't think you were saying conceding, like conceited. I'm sorry. I thought you said conceiving, and so I understand. Okay, I'll focus on that. And I'll just, you know, whatever I can come up with, I hope I'll help you out. And so you're feeling, your understanding is that just because it's you, you know, this is what my feeling is. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff. I'm not saying I believe it. All I know is past lives have a lot to do with what goes on in these lives. The thing of it is, if we all just remembered it, we'd all be a lot more greater in this world and more compassionate, too, if we remembered. But with that said, I am seeing that this time period right now, and if you're going through some of this work, and if you have done it, I don't know if you said you've done a session or you're getting ready to do more, I feel that there's a lot of stuff that I see you release. It's very positive. I see you being able to release from holding on to a past situation that probably occurred in a past life. Now, when I say probably, you know, like I said, I'm not saying, I don't like to push, it's not about beliefs. I do know that past lives is just that. They are truth. But let's say what I'm seeing here, I see a past life, and it's almost like I feel that it looks like you were young and there was a problem and you weren't able perhaps to have children. I'm just going to go real quick into this. But I see you being able to let go of that. So whatever you're seeking out, help, there's some really good person, I don't know exactly who it is, but I do feel that it's real positive energy around you right now to help you through this. So if you can let that go through hypnosis or whatever, great. I do feel it's also causing you to feel a little bit like you don't have the strength available to handle this, or the fear. I don't feel there's anything wrong. I feel there's a lot of negative judgment coming from you. There's some other people, and it's all about you. And this is, again, there's the past life stuff going on here. But if you can get through that, I see you getting unhappy, and it's been ongoing. Like the sun's not shining, you're upset, and you're happy and upset. But you know what I do feel? I absolutely feel that this is coming from some really deep pain from 3 years ago in this life. Some really hard, painful heart, ow, stuff that's already happened, and it's very painful. I don't know what went on. Anyway, I do feel, and I'm seeing, you're going to be a mom. You know what? You're already real motherly to a lot of other people that are close to you, or that mean a lot to you, maybe family, or kind of like family. You're really nurturing. You're going to be a fantastic mom. How old are you? Real quickly, I'm going to ask.
30. Be 31. 30.
Okay, this is, you know what? This is what I want to tell you. I feel, not in this spring, we're in spring. This is what I'm seeing. I feel you can sort this out. I see, and I could be off, but it's on tape, everybody. You can come after me if you want, but I see this. Catch me if you can. Around April into May, there's conception, or you're already showing of a pregnant woman would, and it's really going to be a really great, healthy one too. By the way, it's going to suit you fine. There's a woman that doesn't like it very much. She has issues. She has problems of her own. It doesn't matter. You rise to the occasion and be happy for yourself. It's going to be good for you. But I think you should continue about seeking out that past life stuff. Or the hypnosis is good. It's good for you right now. And you're doing fine. I really see a really great stuff coming up for you. It's going to be a little difficult in the months ahead, but not to worry. I know it sounds like 2015, okay? So that's not too far away. You're young. Okay, I hope I helped you in a short period of time.
It's on some point, so thank you very much, Maureen.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, and have a great every day. Bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Very well said, Maureen. Have a great every day. I like that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now I believe I have a call from Ohio. Hello, who am I speaking with in Ohio?
Sherry.
Hi, Sherry. Thank you for calling Psychic Viewpoint. How may I help you?
Yeah, I'm calling. So I just bought a car last week, a 2000 Grand Am, and it's not running right. Do you feel like the transmission's out?
That's a good question. Let's see here. Is the transmission out, first of all? Let's just find out.
It's going out. It don't want to run.
Right. One second while I pick up on this situation, okay? Is the transmission out? Is the transmission? You know what? I'm thinking that there might be a problem with the transmission, but that's not why it won't run. That there are actually deeper problems with that like even beyond the transmission. So, I mean, I'm getting the impression that even if you fix the transmission, you would find that there would still be some other problems that would affect its ability to run, you see. However, I think what we're really going for is this car going to be street legal and running here, you know, in a reasonable amount of time? I'm sure you would like to know the answer to that question, right? Because I'm getting a sensation.
Yeah, about a week ago, be a week ago today. My friend at work lied to me. He said, oh, it's a great car. The antifreeze is running through it. So I think it needs a radiator. It needs brakes. And I'm pretty sure the transmission's going.
I think that person needed to get rid of that car in a jiffy, saw you coming, and mentally just sort of rubbed his hands together, as much as I hate to say that. However, let me just see what the future might hold with you and this vehicle real fast, because I'm seeing multiple mechanical failures with this.
I don't have the money, I'm fixing come now.
Ah.
Terrible.
Let's see. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry about that. Your best bet, maybe. I don't know what to advise you to do with it, but you know, you probably don't want to keep the car. I don't think it's going to be any use to you, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes, ma'am. I'm really sorry about that. I wish you best of luck in getting rid of that car, okay? And hopefully getting some justice out of this situation. And I do believe that is possible. Okay, I believe that this situation, though you got yourself a lemon, I don't see this as being
a complete
one. Yeah, I
got a lemon, that's right. And I work with her and she faces me every day. And, you know, I just don't understand why she did me the way she did. She knows I'm fixed income and don't have that much money. And I'm going to put it up for sale. And if I can't sell it, you know, down the truth, what's wrong with it? Somebody will probably be able to buy it.
Yeah, and I know that you'll be taking it up with the seller pretty soon about why it won't run and, you know, all this, that, and the other. I expect that you know, the next step here will probably be that you'll call this person up or talk to him, explain to him what's happened, tell him a lot of the things that you've told me that you can't really afford this sort of transaction, you know. And, you know, the Eight of Cups in the end of this sort of timeline tells me, you know, with the eight actually tells me that there might be some karmic justice in this. So I mean, it could be. I'm not going to get your hopes up that you're going to get your money back. I'm not going to say that. However, maybe the loss on your end doesn't have to be as bad as it is now. Do you see what I mean? Maybe you can appeal to the seller to sacrifice a little something. You know, maybe you can appeal to their emotions, etc., and get some of your money back.
Yeah, I can't take them in the court. No, I can't take her in the court because she put down that she gave me the car. See.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
So, there's no doubt.
But maybe I can get something out of it. If this ain't going, you know. But you can find something before long.
Ma'am, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what your last statement was.
Can you see me finding another car soon?
That is possible. I wouldn't set your hopes up. I wouldn't set your goals too high on the car that you're going to get. But obviously, what you need to do is get transportation. So, yeah, it's going to be possible to get another car soon, but it's going to have to be on the low end of the scale, you know, to keep in line with your finances.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's going
to be possible. Okay, but again, the main thing here is not to set your goals too high on this. You essentially just want to squeak through with your head above the water. Do you see what I'm saying, Sherry?
I bought this one for my daughter, and then I have a white one, but I put a battery in it, and fur come flying out of it. So I don't know what's wrong with my car, my Oldsmobile.
I don't know what's wrong with it.
Maybe
if you can find somebody else who's had similar financial dealings with this seller. Maybe you two can gang up on this person and go see him together. Do you know what I mean? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I was pretty sure it was a transmission.
Well, I really do wish you the best of luck going forward, okay? I'm sorry that this has to happen to you.
Yes, I know. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling and have a great night, okay?
Yes. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right, and I do believe, actually, we have a call for Carmen from California.
Hi there, caller. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. What can I do for you tonight?
My name is Dominique.
Yes, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Carmen. I'd like to ask about my romantic life. and specifically my romantic life in regards to a monogamous relationship.
Okay, and what's the person's name, please?
So I should actually say the person's name?
No,
or can I just
ask
about my romantic life and then see what happens?
Pardon me?
Well, I'm wondering, I didn't know I was going to have to ask the person's name, but I could, but I'm also just curious, can I just ask simply about my romantic life?
Oh, I see. I'm a telepath, so I better am at analyzing situations. I can try a tarot reader for you.
Okay, then I can give you the person's name if you want.
Sure, that helps you. One moment. What's the story? What's his name? I'm pulling your cards as we speak.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Will.
Okay. So what I see here is a friend is influencing him, and this friend is possibly trying to get him to slow down, perhaps be more cool, more relaxed in the relationship, and not give you as much import or as much emphasis in your relationship. So if he withdraws, it's because of outside influences or pressure. What you will find is that his communication may be somewhat stunted, but this is due to the fact that he is very slow to let go of people. So in a way, what he's doing is he's trying to build you up so that you don't let him down. So in other words, if he has a longer relationship with you, then it would take longer for him to break up with you. So what he's doing on two fronts is he's listening to a friend. And he's also doing that because he thinks the pacing would be better for your relationship. In translation, this means that he actually is probably interested in you, but that you would find that he would slow down his communication so that it would amp up the intrigue and mystery a little bit more. Must like you enough to do so. So are you dating right now, or what's the story on this? I've got your cards in front of me.
The story is we met 5-6 weeks ago, and he lives about 4 or 5 hours away, and we've been, in those 5 weeks, we've been talking regularly, so that's how we've gotten to know each other, is talking through telephone calls. And then he just came up to see me on his birthday, which was yesterday. And then he left.
So I would take this reading as a slight caution that despite all this lovely romance that you're heading into, which is sort of like the honeymoon phase, very easy, very enjoyable, that the pattern of him later will be to disconnect and distance himself somewhat. But then again, most of them do. So I would have to just probably say that you probably would just expect that this is a natural relationship, and that you probably could have a long-standing sort of relationship, long distance, but that I do see some drop-off in this communication. So don't get too excited. But probably just try and see how far this goes in terms of just enjoyability, because he's really interested in you, and that is the essence of life. So I'm going to, because my voice is a little bit bad right now, pass you on. But if you don't mind calling me, if you like to, my name is Carmen, and it was a very nice meeting you.
Yes, likewise. Thank you, Carmen.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Hi.
Thank you very much for that, Carmen. Steve, we have a call for you from Massachusetts.
Thank you. Who's calling from Massachusetts?
Hi, this is Richa here.
Hello, how are you?
I have a question about... Sorry, Steve, did you want to say something?
I was asked how you are, but it's okay. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question about my job. Okay. I don't like to travel much. I'm being asked to travel for 2 weeks to Houston. My heart really desires that I basically get a high-level position here in the area and not have to travel as much and kind of start, you know, building roots here a little bit.
Okay. So what's your question?
My question is that what do you see about my job? I'm being asked to travel to Houston. Mm-hmm. I don't like to travel as much. Will I, like, is this just short term? My heart really desires to have a long term, high level position here in Massachusetts where I don't have to travel.
I see that as a possibility in the future, but I don't feel it unfolds as quickly as you want it to. And I feel strongly that your superiors are basically expecting to see a strong level of commitment from you to the organization and its needs. So I feel like you've got to manage this carefully and take a very balanced and mature approach to the situation, because you run the risk of being perceived as unflexible or as being somebody that wants what they want but isn't necessarily wanting to accommodate the business needs. So I feel that it is very possible that you get an opportunity in that area. I don't feel it's as soon as you would like, and I feel that you have to be patient, and I feel that you need to be flexible and show willing in the organization in the meantime. And I feel that if you don't, then the conclusion within the organization is likely to be that you're not being flexible enough, or you're not catering to the organization's needs, and that could go against you. That's what I feel.
So if I take this 2-week assignment, do you think that, if I just stick to this 2-week traveling assignment, will I be able to find something more local here, and will I be able to just survive this, like, without having to travel a lot? Or you think that
I feel like you've got to show willing. I don't feel that just by going on this assignment that you would therefore get exactly what you want when you want it. In other words, this would happen for you quickly. I feel like you're looking at 9 months, maybe more. 9 months, 12 months feels like about that, during which you really have to be flexible and show how committed you are to the organization. I feel that there's almost this testing period, really. So I don't feel that you can simply go on this one assignment and think, okay, once I've come back from that, I'll get what I want. I feel like it's going to take longer, and I feel like you will need to show flexibility and take different assignments and do some travel. And then, you know, in time, you'll be able to secure an opportunity. But it feels to me like almost 12 months out. So it feels like if you really want this, you need to show willing and make it clear that you understand the organization's needs. Because, you know, if you're accepting the things that you need to do to meet the organization's needs, it puts you in a positive light, and it puts you in a better position to negotiate some of your needs. So I feel if you've got to play it, you've got to play it carefully. You can get what you want, but not as quickly as you want. But if you play it the wrong way, I feel it could backfire. That's what I feel, and that's what the cards show me as well. So really, the short answer is you need to be patient and be flexible. And in time, 9 to 12 months, yes, there could be or there would be a position for you locally that requires less travel and is more aligned with the lifestyle you want to live. Okay?
How long will I have to travel? Will I have to travel a lot this year?
I feel there's a fair amount of travel. I don't believe, it doesn't feel like more than 50% travel. But, you know, the cards and my guides make me feel that you're in a role that requires you to go where the work requires you to go. Are you dealing with clients?
Yeah.
You're working with clients. So, you know, when we're working with clients, we have to go to the clients. But I don't feel that you're looking at more than 50% of your time traveling.
You know what? When I say travel, all I'm really concerned about is air travel. Driving to a client location locally within this New England area is not a problem for me. Like, you know, going to Hartford, Connecticut, 1 hour, or, you know, New Jersey maybe once a while. Those things are not a problem for me. I don't personally like to take a plane to, like, Houston.
Mm-hmm. But I feel you need to in this role, this organization, because they are expecting you to go where the client requires you. You've got to go where, you've got to cater to the client's needs. And if the client's not nearby, you have to travel. So I feel like you've got to be flexible about it.
Yeah, that's true. They expect me to be flexible about it and all. But do you feel that I will have to travel a lot, or you feel that I will not have, like, it will be okay even if I have drive to all these clients? There are a lot of possibilities that can happen in the Connecticut area, in the Hartford area. We have bid for $6 million worth of project right in the Waltham area too. Will any of those mature? They are like 2+ year contracts.
I feel like you're looking at 50% of your time on the road. And that's a combination of different forms of travel. But I feel like 50% of the time you'll be away from home. And I feel like that you need to expect that for 9 to 12 months before there's a significant change in your circumstances. I feel like that's the way it has to go in this organization for you to get where you want to be, in terms of the role you would like to have, okay?
So this role will not even come forth earlier than that? Like, you mean that I will not get promoted before 9 to 12 months, or you feel that this role only will not come in front for next 9 to 12 months?
I feel like you've got to wait 9 to 12 months, okay? I feel like you've got to be patient, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you very much for that, Steve. Maureen, we have a call for you from Florida.
That sounds lovely. I like where... Hello, Florida. My name's Maureen. Hello. Hello, Florida. I know you're there.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Isn't it spring break almost there? Hi, how are you?
Hi, Maureen. My name is Ivory. I actually live in D.C. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm fine. Thank you, Ivory in D.C. what can I help you with?
I just wanted to ask a question about, you know, as far as my employment, what do you see happening? I actually recently just was offered a position, but I want to see if you know, can see anything, okay. What's going on with that?
Okay, so because of the time, you know, I have to do readings. I want to make sure I do the best I can for you. So you have been offered an opportunity that you obviously you're open to, for good reason, because, well, I'm sure because you're overqualified, for no challenge. So what you're asking is perhaps this is a good time that you did make a good, you made the choice. I didn't tell you to, you know, you already know that part. What am I saying? I'm losing my mind with the wording. Affirming or giving you affirmation, that was smart. So you have one opportunity right now, which you did reach out on your own by choice, and it looks pretty good. And so you're wondering if this might be the best route, or are you asking if this is going to be offered as a, you know, a real reality where you'll be able to move on up from where you are. I want to just make sure I'm clear because of the time.
See if it's something that I'll be able to move on from where I'm at, and if I actually will get the position, because
Okay.
I haven't heard from him yet.
But you did reach out to this one particular one that you really want, and I understand. I'm happy you came to the point of making a decision to do that, because it must have been difficult. Sometimes you're waiting. It doesn't matter you waited. You know, this is a thing where you're at, you're overqualified. You already know this. It is what it is. It was like, it wasn't like you're seeing any vision out there. You're a visionary. Excuse me, I'm all choked up. You're a visionary. You need to see something. Nothing. You've mastered other skills. It's time to move on. You're looking for a deeper meaning, too, with what you're doing right now, which a lot of people are, but it's almost like there must be a deeper meaning. Some people don't really need it. I feel for you. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe it means liking to go into a place and feeling your challenge, making a difference. Whatever it is, I feel you're on a really good path, and the timing is absolutely great. You're really I don't know how long it's been, but I do feel it in the last 2 years. Perhaps you haven't felt this way, and it's just getting closer and more you'll be feeling it. It's like and there's something about maybe a new car. I'm just saying, away. Like, you're not a runaway car anymore, but maybe there might be another car coming up for you too. But anyway, you're on a road, you're on your journey, you're on your path, you're on the road driving. You know exactly what direction you're heading. You're not going, okay, is that the right wind, right or left? And it's all really on the positive track or positive highway. It's Route 60 is a good highway. Now, you're really taking control of your life. And it feels, it's not like you're just forcing yourself to feel that you are. It is authentically feeling. It's going to be feeling more so in the next 2 weeks. It feels really good. And like I said, what I'm seeing is I feel that something's been kind of like, or you haven't been able to find your way back to. There's so much havoc around where you're working. My gosh, get out. It looks like there's a lot of people all over getting down. So everybody's out. It's just big commotion. It's time. It's perfect now. It does feel like it was late January. You got hard-earned victory. There was something about some hard-earned victory that you received. Something, felt something. Was that when you did finally said, "This is it. I gotta go. Get out. Go. I just pick up on January. It feels like later January. And it was harder, and it's a lot of work to get to a victory like this. You kind of hung around this, I think, where you're at for a little longer than maybe. Well, things happen for good lessons and reasons. But this was a time you keep going. My gosh, you got a really good reading here. There's other things coming up even in other areas. You have the gift of being in between worlds. You can see yourself somewhere. I mean, it's almost like, I'm trying to explain it, not in a woo-woo way, but it's like you're not just imagining it. You see yourself heading exactly where you should be. Is it this one you want, the only one you have, by June, July, I see a brand new location, maybe a new residence. If you are willing to, it may not be too far from you, but it looks like a new piece of home or a home that feels really great, like you have driven yourself right there to it. All new changes, and there's relationship good. It's a very good timing. I'm not saying anything you don't know. I'm just going yahoo for you. Is that dating myself? Yahoo. I just feel
right.
You know, you're really stepping in, and it's time, because where you're at is too much. It's all crazy making. All there's changes. You don't want. You'll by choice be leaving there. They won't be booting you out. Other people look like they don't know if they're going to be booted out or not. Things are big time changing. It's perfect time. It's a perfect timing. The havoc for you to move on is great. I'm really looking forward to this in your life. It's fantastic.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
The reading. It was rightfully very energized. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, Maureen, thank you very much for that reading. I'd like to remind everyone that if they would like a reading from Maureen or Carmen or Steve or myself, you can find each of us and several more pages of qualified psychics at psychicaccess.com. And that brings us to the end of yet another fabulous show. Big thanks to Doug C., who works behind the scenes to make the rest of us look great. Thanks, Doug. Thanks to my co-hosts as well for joining us tonight, making Psychic Viewpoint an awesome place to be every Thursday night. And speaking of Thursday nights, next Thursday we have a treat. Maureen, care to talk about what's on the agenda?
Yes, I will be interviewing myself all about
my job. Awesome.
It'll be all about me, whatever I want to say, if I don't like it too bad. No, I have a great
I've been waiting
guest.
For that show.
Yeah, I know, I thought so. Mary Casperio. I hope I said that right. She is a good friend and also a business connection, but she's become a very good friend of mine. But we're going to the show, I have decided to title it The Familiar. You know, like the witches, you know.
Yes, the witch is familiar, like your partner. But,
Well, yeah, a lot of times they use the cats. But there's something a little twist in this because the familiar spirits, animal guides. I want everybody to know it's not just about, you know, spirits passed on. Mary has a diversity of, you know, she's an author, but she also does things in paranormal. But it's not, I'm not focusing on that. What I'm focusing on this show, which I feel everybody would be really happy to come to or listen, it has to do with how we, in our world right now, well, in our world, that we, you know, our familiar spirit is a lot about how we reflect our alter ego as an individual. So we get these animals, or we pick animals, I'm domesticated, but also interesting other animals that are closely linked to us as individuals, or we look like them, because they're our spirit, they're our animal companion. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that and about how much that has been playing a part, the science behind how it's been very healthy and helpful for all of us. And it's strange but true how we have this intense bond. We get much back. And I myself don't have a pet anymore, but, you know, it's a proven fact we live longer. They've said it. It's going to be fun. Yeah.
I got to tell you, it's going to be a great interview.
So it's not about your animal guides, so, you know, but you know that in a way it is, like, you know, they are animals.
I almost burst out laughing when you said that you were domesticated, because when I think of your animal guide, I think of like this Bengal tiger, and to say it's domesticated.
Oh, that's funny. No, I'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
I've seen a bat in my little journey. A bat.
The point is, everybody,
thank
show
you.
Up next Thursday so you can hear this marvelous interview.
It's not a pet psychic. It's good, okay? So thank you, and thank you, Stephen. Great show, you guys, and everybody. Doug, okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, and thank you.
I'd just like to close out the show by reminding everybody, StephenFrampton.com with a V. Go there and pick up his book. You'll be glad you did. And we'll see you next Thursday on The Psychic Viewpoint. Bye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.
To lunch. I had great.